Hey, this is Josh from Not a Robot Podcast. We just wanted to let you know that we love doing these shows and appreciate that you're listening. To show us some support, we've cut everything out of the middle. Pay $2.99 a month to get full access to our Discord server on Discord. You get all of our shows as soon as they get released. You get to chat with us and a shout out on the podcast each and every week. You can head over to notarobotpodcast.com for links to join the Discord, send an email to have read on the show, links to our Substack and more. Don't forget to find us on Twitter and Instagram too. Thanks again for listening. Now let's get you back to the show. Stay human.
Hello, humans. It's Rob here with Not a Robot Podcast's DC Comics Review Show, number 148, the world's greatest comic show about the world's greatest superheroes. And with me, as always, is Brandon.
Hello, everybody. Sorry about the drumming in the background. Believe it or not, despite my prodigious skill, it's actually not me playing and talking at the same time. It's someone else.
Don't sell yourself short. We know that's you. You got Mr. Fantastic arms.
You saw nothing.
And Josh.
Hey there, everybody. I'm just sitting here feeling sorry for Superman. I just heard he lost a fortune in crypto.
The coin that bites back.
There you go.
Yeah.
I love how Brandon just doesn't even groan anymore. That's awesome. We all have our parts to play.
Yeah. Okay. So today we are looking at Harley Quinn number 30, Unstoppable Doom Patrol number 3, Nightwing number 104, and Action Comics number 1055. As for the books we are going through today, as well as some honorable mentions, y'all know the drill. We review the books, we talk about them, you hear us talk about them, we'll let you know how they are, we let you know how good they are, we let you know if they're bad, and we hope you read along with us because it's more fun that way. But before we get into all that, as well as the honorable mentions, let's get into some news. What's going on, guys? How you guys doing?
Not too bad, my friend. How are you? Yeah.
I'm all right. Going to a convention this weekend, actually. Not a comic convention. Anime North, it's called.
Still fun.
Kind of a convention, I guess you could call it. But yeah, it's still kind of fun. Yeah. It's not. It's kind of weird where there's a central building, but a lot of the panels are at the surrounding hotels. And the main building is really just selling floors.
Yeah, that is a little odd.
Yeah,
that's weird.
It's really, really weird how they set it up, even though the main building also has conference rooms, but they don't use them. So I don't know what the hell the point is.
Yeah.
No, that's pretty much it for me.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, you're done with finals now, eh? Or you still got a couple
I'm
left?
Finished. I'm free. No, the semester's nice. Over at this point, so it's just me and the rest of the summer and the summer job, but that's not for another 2 weeks, so I've got nice free time to just enjoy myself, read some comics, catch up on some comics, which I've been able to do with haste, and, you know, just relax.
That's good.
Yeah.
Anything in particular?
Is good.
Isaiah, I hope you're listening. I have been like catching up on Ice Cream Man with like a passion, because I think I've just really been getting into the writing for that book recently. So I burned through like volumes 2 through 5 yesterday, because they only collect 4 issues in each volume. So they're really easy to get through, and the writing is so engaging that it's really just so gripping that it's not a chore to get through. It's, you just like fly right through it. So yeah, I'm pretty much just going to finish that until I'm caught up with everything, and then, you know, just eagerly wait for the next issue like everyone else.
Right on. What are you up to, Josh? What's going on? You're muted, bud.
I sure am. Not that a whole
mic
lot.
Button's
has
so finicky.
It is. Well, see, I'm using this different microphone until I get my new one back, and there's no button on this, so it's not sitting there flashing at me, letting me know no one can hear me. Just using the mute button on the software. But anyway, not a whole lot has been going on in my neck of the woods. I've started reading the Grayson comic. I'm 3 issues in. It's not stellar, but I'm not throwing in the towel yet, and I will reserve all judgment until the volume is finished.
Yeah, the first volume is a little awkward. I think most people will attest to that. But as I think a lot of people kind of acknowledge, it's really the second volume, I think, when things kind of really pick up and the series sort of comes into its own. And it'll be interesting to see your reaction. That's actually the first, I believe, solo script that Tom King got to do for the series, where it was, you know, him and Tim Seeley co-plotting, but he was actually scripting that issue. I believe it's issue 5, but I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's how volume 2 starts. And that was the one where I was like, okay, now we're cooking with gas.
All right, well, hopefully I feel the same way y'all do. I will let you know when I get there.
Hopefully. I'd be excited if you actually enjoy it. Excuse me.
I will be surprised, but let's go with, you know, I mean, if it's one more comic that I enjoy, then regardless of who wrote it, it's a wonderful thing. So,
yeah, exactly. Apart from personal stuff, one thing I did notice, because I haven't actually had a lot of comic book news come across my way recently, but one thing that did drop today, and technically also yesterday, can be thrown in together. Marvel announced 2 omnibi, I guess. Do you call it omnibi? Two omnibus.
Omnibuses.
Omnibuses. It sounds so weird,
yeah.
Omnibuses.
Yeah.
Omnibuses,
well, yeah,
sounds
but,
like
I mean, you see
mega
buses
transit
on the street, right? You don't see by on the street. You see buses.
I see plenty of by on the street.
Yeah, if you see
me
walking down
the street. Rim shot.
You know what I mean. God damn.
Are you going shopping? So yeah, two omnibus buses, I guess. Such sounds so weird. Of classic 80s comics that Marvel used to have the rights to, and then recently, I guess, got the permission to reprint them. Yesterday, they announced ROM Space Knight is being reprinted, and now announced today. And Josh, you might be really excited about this one. I don't know. I'll judge your excitement on this. The Micronauts is getting a reprint.
Oh, wow, dude. It's been so long since I heard that word. I forgot it was a word.
Right? The original Bill Mantlo comics are being reprinted. Let me get the issue count. From 1979, actually. And then special edition 1 to 5 from 83. So you get 1 to 29, the annual 1 and 2, and then special edition 1 to 5, all in this collected edition. Plus reproducing Micronauts number 1 in a facsimile edition from 1979. So that's all being reprinted. And if I got to say one thing, and this might just be hopeful on my part. This can't be a coincidence that they've partnered up with Hasbro to reprint these old series all of a sudden. And that I suspect tomorrow we're going to get another announcement. There was recently Hasbro properties being printed that the who the hell was printing it? Holy crap.
IDW.
Well, it says IDW. Thank you. That they lost the licensing last year. Transformers and G.I. Joe, both owned by Hasbro, both printed by Marvel in the 80s, or at least Transformers was. I think they did G.I. Joe, but I'm not too sure about that. And the Marvel Transformers comics were classics.
Conan as well.
There you go. Which I think they already have publishing rights for Conan. Oh, they don't anymore, eh? Because he was on the Avengers for a while, wasn't he?
They blew that so hard. It was kind of disappointing.
Avengers? Really,
I remember. Because this was like right as I was discovering Conan for the first time and getting into the Roy Thomas, Sal Buscema stuff. So I remember when they announced it back in 2018, if you can believe that. And then had the new Jason Aaron's Mahmood. Oh my God, Jason Aaron. Mahmood Azrar series for 2019, and then that was like that had big fanfare, and I think it did decently well because they were able to greenlight a couple of other series. There was like the Jerry Duggan Savage Sword of Conan with Ron Garney, and like I was following all of that stuff. And then I think after about 8 to 10 months, as sales started to dip, they did like one last push. They did like a Conan event with Serpent War, and then just kind of gave up and then had to sell the rights over to Titan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so.
Well, then.
Disappointing. I mean,
Conan's kind of an interesting character in a way. Like, it can definitely fit that bill for people that like fantasy, but at the same time, when people hear Conan, I think they still think of Schwarzenegger. And it just
which is funny
doesn't,
because,
doesn't mean, scream fantasy to me.
Yeah, which is funny because, I mean, action. Dark Horse had the rights to Conan for years, and, I mean, they did pretty well with the series.
Yeah.
Like, you look it up, there are, like, 15 different Conan series from Dark Horse that they were able to, keep for a while. So it's not like they had trouble retaining the rights. So it's just interesting that Marvel had it for basically 3 years and then had to sell it off.
Yeah, that's weird. Well, that'd be interesting. The point I was trying to get across was maybe Marvel is reacquiring the Transformers comics.
It could
acquire G.I. Joe as well. Maybe it's leading to some big announcement, because that's been a question. People haven't talked about Transformers comics in a while, ever since the end of IDW's publishing run last year.
Yeah.
But it's still on my mind. Like, are they going to try and farm out comics rights? If so, who's going to get it? Like, Marvel had it for the longest time. I could definitely see them getting it again. That would certainly be interesting.
With that kind of a relationship being budding with all of these, the Micronauts and et cetera, I mean, it would make sense.
Yeah.
It would make sense for sure. And then the next thing you know, Optimus Prime shows up in a movie with Daredevil.
there's something about driving blind in there. And I can't quite figure it out. Yeah. Why Daredevil of all people? That's an interesting choice.
It's just what came out. And then you said driving blind, and then I thought of Al Pacino, and like it's kind of snowballed from there. So,
train thought of your way into Dog Day Afternoon, as is
indeed. Well, scent of a woman, but
yeah. Oh, well, I mean, like now I've made you think about Dog Day Afternoon. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
So thanks.
You're welcome.
But I think that's about it for me, anyway.
Fair enough. Yeah, I think that's about it for all of us. You got anything, Brandon?
No, anything nothing. Nothing else in terms of comics.
Yeah, it's been a pretty quiet week.
Yeah, there was that really. I mean, it was such a sweet, endearing tribute page to Rachel Pollack.
Yes.
Known most notably for Doom Patrol, It's illustrated wonderfully with amazing colors. It says,
goodbye,
my friends.
It's a great quote in the context of Rachel Pollack, but I hate that quote. I hate that quote because of the context of it, but that's, I appreciate the tribute, of course.
Yeah, it'll pull on your heartstrings with the with the right motivation. It got me a little bit. I was like, oh.
Yeah, DP fans will know what I'm talking about. It's not a very good issue, but it was a nice sentiment to send off Rachel Pollack.
Fair enough. Also, Josh, can I make a request?
Sure.
So last week you had GL, the animated series. This week you have Batman, the animated series. Next week, on your background, can you play the first episode of Superman, the animated series? Just go through all the anime. Then we'll do Batman Beyond and then Static Shock and then Justice League. Yes. As
I said. I will do what I can.
So I've been thinking about watching Superman, the animated series again recently. I just haven't gotten around to it.
We'll watch it during the podcast. All right.
Yeah, why not? I don't need volume. I just need the visuals. What honestly did it? It raised a question that I brought up to people. I don't remember if anybody answered. Like, who was your ideal voice for Superman in animated form? Is it George Newbern or John Daly? Tim Daly, yeah, not John Daly.
Probably Tim Daly. I think, particularly just because I've been rewatching a lot of Superman TOS, so that's kind of the voice that comes to mind right now.
I did a comparison, or I watched, I didn't do a, I watched a comparison video. And honestly, I think I'm more Tim Daly.
Yeah.
Like, I honestly didn't really notice much of a difference when Justice League started versus his voice in Superman TOS. And then when I found out later, I'm like, oh shit. Okay, I hear the differences now. And Tim Daly just sounds so much better. George Newbern actually has like classic sound to his voice, but.
Yeah,
I think Tim Daly's he's got a better Superman voice.
I always thought he sounded a bit more relaxed, which I kind of liked. Like, I never saw Superman as being very uptight and posturing. Like, Tim Daly's Superman, like, that's another thing about that show. Like, he's someone who's not afraid to, like, crack wise or make a joke. Like, I rewatched, I think it was a couple weeks ago, the first episode where Mr. Mixius Pytlick first appears. And, like, Superman is just a troll that entire episode. And it's great.
Yeah.
Because it could be very simple for him to get angry and, like, upset and, like, I'm so tired of this fifth dimension. But, like, literally, he's just like, fuck it. Like, if he's going to fuck with me, I'll fuck with him. And just starts trolling him back. And it's so great. And he has such a casual nature about it.
Exactly. No, that was a really good episode. I can definitely see that for sure. That's a good point.
You guys are, I think it's really, really hard for me to, it was Newbern that was, no, it was Daly that was in the majority of the DCAU, right?
Realistically, he did Justice League and Unlimited. And then I think he was in the animated
movie series.
Yeah.
It was Tim Daly.
Yeah, I think George Newbern really just did the animated series.
Yeah. Then it's completely Daly.
Yeah.
That I watch those and I feel like I'm listening to Superman. So 100%. I couldn't remember the animated series voice to save my life right now. I haven't seen it in forever, but the DC animated movies, hell yeah, that's Superman's voice.
It's really worth rewatching, I gotta say. I feel like I'm plugging it every week, but I think it's just because it's like the thing I kind of get to do when I have that little ounce of free time. I get to watch an episode of Superman TOS, and it's worth it. Like, I think it doesn't get quite enough love as Batman TOS, and that's probably just because that one had more iconic episodes, I will admit, but I think Superman TOS is just, it's a great representation of Superman and his mythology in a lot of ways.
It really is. I think the biggest downside to Superman the Animated Series is the fact that it got a video game on N64.
Yeah. Bit of a downgrade.
Yeah.
Hey, who's your least favorite Superman voice actor? Jerry O'Connell.
Really?
Yes.
What was he in?
Thrones of Atlantis.
Really?
I know he was Thrones of Atlantis right off the top of the head. Yeah, for sure.
I didn't know the voice actor's name.
Yeah, Jerry O'Connell. From all kinds of immature shit a long time ago, and now he's on The View.
Oh,
he's on The View. Oh, Darren Criss voiced him in Legion of Superheroes. Interesting.
Oh, that is interesting.
Jack Quaid is voicing him in the upcoming show, My Adventures with Superman.
Yeah, that's kind of funny.
Wait a second.
Damn.
You know what? I'm going to take that back. Jerry O'Connell is not my least favorite. I didn't realize he did so many.
Oh, yeah, it was an Apocalypse War. Hush. Batman Hush. Reign of the Superman. Interesting. Oh, he voiced in Death of Superman.
Superman Man of Tomorrow. That was bad. That was bad voice acting.
I'm on the behind the voice actors list right now. What year did that come out? Because it's going by year.
What year did what come out?
The movie you're talking about.
Throne of Atlantis?
You know, the one you just mentioned. You didn't mention Throne of Atlantis, did you?
Yeah, that was the first one I brought up. That's the only movie I mentioned.
Oh.
And then I said I didn't realize that that Jerry O'Connell was in so many.
I could have sworn something else. I don't know.
he was in Dark Side War. He was in fucking Death of Superman, Reign of Superman, and Batman Hush.
Yeah.
Some other stuff, but anyway,
I don't think I watched any of those, so but there's a few different voice actors. Like, I gotta check out Matthew Mercer voiced him, Nolan North voiced him. I gotta check this out.
I mean, Channing Tatum and Alan Tudyk. Like, Nolan North just doubles as Superboy and Superman in Young Justice. That one I recognize.
Well, he also voiced him in a few other things.
Mm.
Okay. Like a lot of other things.
So I'm not a fan of his voice in Man of Tomorrow, but I definitely like it better than The New Frontier. It doesn't even, yeah. Dude's name is Kyle MacLachlan, which... he's an actor, and I've seen him in a lot of stuff. But
if you've ever seen Twin Peaks, you know Kyle MacLachlan. Oh my god, I never knew he voiced Superman.
Yep, in The New Frontier, not a huge part, but yeah, by far the worst Superman voice that I can remember.
I know I watched. I'd have to go back and check that out because I really like Kyle MacLachlan. But the more I think about it, the less I think that's a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he could definitely pull it off, but I just don't remember his voice, you know, in the context of Superman at all.
Yeah. Oh, Yuri Lowenthal voiced him as well.
Ooh,
I think most famously known as Spider-Man in the Spider-Man video game.
Ben 10.
Yeah. Oh, damn. Christopher McDonald voiced him in Batman Beyond? Seriously? Mm. I thought that was George Newbern.
I definitely know it wasn't Newbern's voice. I guess I never bothered to look up who that was. Because he has, it's like that's the episode where he recruits Terry to join, like, the Justice League Beyond. And I can remember the voice vaguely, but I never bothered to actually look up who that was. I guess that makes sense, though.
So apparently I had it backwards. George Newbern was the one that voiced him in Justice League and Tim Daly in Superman Toss. I could have sworn it was the other way around.
Tim Daly did the majority of Superman Toss, but Newbern filled in with Newbern filled in for him at like in the middle. I think that's right.
Nah, Tim Daly did the whole thing. At least according to this, anyway. I just thought I thought I had it backwards. I thought it was the other way around. But Tim Daly did actually do more after that. Oh, damn, Michael Dangerfield. So there's been a lot of voice actors for Superman. Adam Baldwin? Oh, God, I forgot about that. Okay, that's enough. I could go on. I love voice actors. It's a great thing to look up. Anyway, I guess we should get into some comics since we're here.
Probably, yeah.
All right, so we're going to start off our review segments with Harley Quinn number 30. This is brought to us by, wow, autocorrect messed me up. Not Tony Howard, Teeny Howard, with art from Sweeney Boo, letters from Steve Wands, and a wonderful cover from Sweeney Boo. We open on Earth 26, where the Zoo Crew are going up against their toughest foe since Frogzilla, Backside. Yes, the jokes are heavy in this issue. Alley Cat Abra, the famous cat magician, gifts Captain Carrot the magic clownfish as the ultimate weapon in their universe, and just as he's about to use it, it disappears, leaving the Zoo Crew to be decimated by the female furries. God, I miss the Zoo Crew book. Oh. Meanwhile, on Earth Zero, or New Earth, we kind of hammer that down. What the hell is it called now? I'm just going to go with Earth Zero. Harley is determined to get this clownfish back to where it came from. She calls up Zatanna for a multiversal teleportation spell, but she's left on hold, and then up picks the phone. And who picks up the phone but Dr. Fate, who convinces her to instead use a more menial method because, you know, they can't really mess with the multiverse right now. It's a little fragile, and menial methods sometimes solve your problems a little easier. So going the more menial route, she decides to order a cosmic treadmill and uses it. Sure, there's nothing
from
more menial.
From the Flash Museum.
From the Flash Museum, complete with IKEA instructions and an Allen key to help. That's fantastic. So with
relatable.
The help. Oh, yeah. God, yeah. Yeah. You buy like a whole house worth of IKEA furniture, you end up with like 20,000 different, well, not even different, they're the same Allen keys you don't know what to do with. Right, so she, no, that's the next line. With the help of her newly multiverse-powered hyenas, somewhat newly, they are being talked through by other, I think what they said, Universe 48, Earth 48 versions of themselves. She makes it to Earth 26 using the cosmic treadmill and their help and finds it destroyed. It's just in shambles. To shreds, you say. She comes across Captain Carrot after doing a little search around and tries to give the fish back to him, but he's a little too pissed off about the fact that she kind of just grabbed it by accident and squandered it and didn't actually need it, so he fights her instead. Kind of don't blame him there. Meanwhile, back at her home, Ivy returns to find no Harley Quinn and a broken houseplant that was gifted to her by Ivy and was apparently hard to kill, yet it's dead. If you remember last issue, Harley sacrificed it to make a spell happen.
So. Yep.
Yeah. And in our backup, we have, written by Nicole Maines with art from Mindy Lee and letters from Hassan Asmani Elhow. It's another dream sequence for Harley, where this time she is a knight riding through a kind of a down out of luck village, trying to find her beloved princess trapped in a castle asleep, which is Ivy. And yet every person she talks to, instead of giving her straight directions to the tower where Ivy is kept, instead asks for help. Constant side quests, never a main quest, until eventually the town is attacked and she fights through the horde of attackers to get all the way to Ivy and wakes up just before planting a kiss on her. just cute little story. Just fun little
one. Yeah, it is.
I enjoyed it. Yeah. Backup was quite good. Main story's quite good. Harley's pissing everyone off.
I'm shocked to hear you say the main story is quite good, considering it featured the death and destruction of, like, your favorite characters.
I'm just happy they're there. I'm just happy
they're dead. They've been massacred.
They've been dead before. They were once transformed into normal animals and then were stepped on. This is a mercy in comparison, all right? This is fine.
You know it's that bad when literally the only Zoo Crew content you'll get is watching them all get killed by a villain named fucking Backside, and you're still like, yep, I'll take it. Such massive
kill. Yep. I am so starving, I'll take the crumbs.
Ugh.
Yeah.
The crumbs of Backside sending the female furries to seek out the panty line equation.
See, I spent way too much time on the internet. You said that makes me hate this. The crumbs of Backside alone was bad enough, but then you had to say female furries and the panty line equation in the same sentence, and it's just...
You're welcome. Okay.
0 out of 10.
Oh, no!
Oh, God. Yeah, honestly, though, I miss the Zoo Crew so much. I really wish somebody... Teeny Howard can do a book. Teeny Howard and Sweeney Boo, get a Zoo Crew book going. Make this a backdoor pilot for, like, a miniseries, please. I'm all for this. Captain Carrot is such a dream. I was actually going through, like, some of the old covers recently, and I realized Captain Carrot was actually a brown bunny, not a blonde bunny. Somewhere along the line, they changed the color of his fur.
Maybe it was one of those post-crisis or post-infinite crisis or post-New 52 or post-rebirth changes. It's hard to keep track, as I'm sure you know.
So many posts, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's been that way since at least Infinite Crisis, because I think that's when they had their 3-issue mini. I don't know. It's kind of weird. Apart from that, though, art was really good. I liked the art of both the main and the backup. I thought it was a lot of fun. 8.75 out of 10. I want more Captain Carrot. I really do.
I was kind of bummed. Captain Carrot. Like, yeah. I came away from this one, I was like, this feels so destructive. Like, they just put the multiverse back together, and then, I mean, unintentionally, obviously, but Harley just kind of fucked it all up. So, I don't know. This seems like... weirdly, like, backsliding to me in a way, but I mean, aside from that, it was fun, I suppose. Like, I don't really have too much to say other than it's humorous, I guess. So,
yeah,
I give a whole issue 8 out of 10.
Right on. Well, not bad. Yeah, I mean, it's Captain Carrot, there's subtext, there's really bad jokes, there's dirty jokes. It's what else could you expect from a superhero cartoon rabbit? Yep. The Zoo Crew meeting their end kind of fucking bummed me out for a second there in the book. I thought Captain Carrot was going to hitch a ride home with Harley. Unfortunately, that's not the case. Now he's like... all alone on his home planet, and nobody's there to ask him what's up, Doc. That's a bummer. But Ivy is home, and the story all the way around was fun. The backup, Ivy's back, and Harley wakes up next to her, but Harley is still on Earth Carrot, so I'm not sure where the dream lies. What I do know is that Mindy Lee is an absolute fantastic artist and colorist. I hope to see much more from them all the way around throughout the whole damn issue. Art is great. You know Sweeney Booze is going to be great. Pretty decent story in the back half. Pretty fun one in the first. It looks great. It reads great. And it's a hell of a good time. You know, the downside is, again, that the entire Zoo Crew is good. The Zoo Crew is dead, but hopefully Rob is right, and we won't have that be the truth from very long. I gave it an 8.25 out of 10.
My whole theory is the fact that it's Earth 26 that this happened on. It's the cartoon world. They may have died, but like Toon laws exist and they don't stay dead. They could, it's basically Looney Tunes with superpowers. They don't die. It's impossible.
They don't die. They multiply. That's what DC needs. Bebe's kids. I don't know if you guys remember that shit at all, but man, that stuff was hilarious.
It's on the tip of my mind. It sounds familiar, but I can't quite think of what that is. I know it.
It's an old cartoon.
Yeah.
It's an old cartoon. That was their motto, Bebe's kids. We don't die, we multiply.
That's got a bug. I got to look that up. Anyway, we're going to move on to Unstoppable Doom Patrol number 3, brought to us by Josh.
Indeed. All right. Written by Dennis Culver. Art from Chris Burnham. Just lost it. Brian Reber on colors. Letters by Pat Brichot and Burnham and Reber on the cover. Start this out with Robot Man and Negative Man in the car. Kyle Rayner and Guy Gardner are following behind. The Doom Patrol then decide that they need to outrun the Lanterns and really think that they can because they're jamming up the Lantern Rings, which, you know, is not cool. They're butting heads, and uncharacteristically, the DP are claiming dominance over the rescue of all things weird. Well, I mean, not really, but that's what Guy is saying to Kyle. Negative Man and Robot Man, they have Starbro in their backseat. Who is Starbro, you ask? Why? I'll tell you. Starro attacked a load of people. People got infected, as usually happens. Someone named Mason was one of them. Mason's latent metagene activated to protect Mason, but not in time to prevent the Starro from latching onto him. It did, however, merge them, and Mason seems happy with it and is acting pretty normal, though he does have a bit of Starro's telepathic powers, which is how he found the Doom Patrol to begin with. The Lanterns, Kyle and Guy, catch up, and it doesn't matter. Robot Man activates the car's ghost mode, and they just drive through a building. The Lanterns stop in a bit of shock, and the negative spirit sneaks up behind them and knocks them out. Not long afterwards, the Lanterns catch up, and it's a standoff until the ring broadcasts an emergency signal for a science cell breakout, and it looks like it's really messed up. So off they go, racing off to Oa. That turns out that was Starbro, though, messing with their minds, which apparently took a lot out of him because he's not full Starro. Cut to Port-au-Prince Haiti and Mr. Drew, who gets a package delivered. He opens the box and announces that they are going to war. Inside the box was a mask, like a monkey mask or a samurai demon mask, and it actually looks familiar, but I can't figure out where it's from. While all of this is going on, the rest of the DP are fighting Animal Vegetable Mineral Man. And if you're a classic DP fan, you know exactly who that is. It's such a fitting story for the DP, and this new Starro character is pretty interesting. We need a fun adventure mini featuring Starbro and Jaro. I'd read the hell out of that. But as far as this goes, again, the story is really good. The art is the only place I feel let down. It's not where it needs to be for me. DP should be a little wacky for sure, and that should be reflected in the art, but this isn't wacky. It's just kind of weird choices, thick lines, and a lot of bad faces. So not a fan, but the story and my interest, it saved the score from for the book a whole bunch. But that's all I had to say about that. 7.75 out of 10 for the Doom Patrol. Yeah, it was a hell of a book, though, guys. I mean, fucking unstoppable Doom Patrol. It very well could be unstoppable for a little while.
Yeah, I hope
hell so. Hell of a fun time.
The acknowledgments of dead names, I think, is a good throwback to what little DP history I do know with the transgender characters and also Rachel Pollack. I think that was just a nice little nod to the whole community and the idea. And I agree about Starbro and Jaro. Where the hell is Jaro? Yeah. That was the best part of that Justice League run.
I think Jaro may have sacrificed himself in Death Metal.
You know, I was thinking about that just as you were saying it. I think you're right.
I think that's the case. But you know what? Damn it, if Infinite Frontier can bring back Roy, it can bring Jaro back too.
Damn straight. Maybe Jaro was the sacrifice needed to bring Roy back. Maybe Roy is Jaro incarnate.
Well, we'll know the next time he sees Batman if he calls him dad.
It's going to be really fucking weird. I just need to see Dick Grayson's reaction to that.
That would be hilarious.
That would be great. I love seeing the GLs in this. I know it's a Doom Patrol book, but I still love seeing the GLs in this.
Good it's picks been for so them long. To show up to.
Yeah, it's been a long time since we've seen Kyle or Guy in fucking anything. So why not? And honestly, like, for this series, I could read every issue as a Monster of the Week episode type story, just on a different mission every month to save a new metahuman. And I would love it. Like, this is, it's been that way so far. Three completely different one-off issues with a somewhat overarching plot, but ultimately it's just them going around saving metahumans from danger. And I think it's great. It's a wonderful idea. It's 8.75 for this, like, the between the art and the story. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm having a much better time than I imagined I would. I remember when I sent the solicit for this, I was like, oh, God.
This yeah.
More crossover with the DC. Like, this is so fucking lame. But honestly, like, I feel like it's doing a surprisingly good job juggling the weird with the grounded. And when I say grounded in this context, I mean grounded within the DC universe. So you get, you know, the Lantern chase. It's definitely incorporated there, but it still kind of keeps that Doom Patrol flavor. And then, of course, you get the intercuts and the teases that are teasing it more future strangeness, which I really appreciated. Also, and this is how I know Dennis Culver knows his stuff, because I remember reading an interview with Joshua Williamson, and he was like, I really like Grant Morrison. I admire their stuff. But Dennis, like, he is, like, big on Morrison, like, really knows his stuff. And I was shocked to see that not only did he remember the painting that ate Paris, which is a pretty iconic DP story from that run, but that he remembered the exact, I think it was the Justice League International team that had Guy on it, who, like, literally they were just kind of, like, if you read that it's like two issues that kind of comprise that particular part of the Brotherhood of Dada story. But if you read it, like, they're kind of just standing there with their mouths open, like they don't have anything to do, because they've gone off and been weird in the painting that ate Paris, and the rest of the Justice League are just like, I mean, we can't really do anything. Superman kind of gets like a small moment, but everyone else, they're kind of just like hanging around. I think Animal Man gets one line, and I assume that was because Morrison was writing the book at the time. But anyway, back to Unstoppable Doom Patrol. No, it's been like an actual genuine delight reading this book so far. And I think I'm also in agreement with Rob that I'm also really enjoying the art from Chris Burnham. So this one gets an 8.5 out of 10 for me.
Right on. All right. Well, Brandon, we're not going to let you stop there, because now we're going to talk about Nightwing number 104, which I honestly, between Doom Patrol, Nightwing, and Action Comics, this is like a prime week for you, man.
Yeah, no, I'm getting everything I want, so I'm very happy. And Green Arrow.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that, right?
Some primo Roy moments. But yes, no, that's it's a good way to segue into our next book, which is, of course, Nightwing number 104, the conclusion of our little Hell Heist arc, written, of course, by Tom Taylor, with art from Travis Moore, colors from Adriana Lucas, and letters from, one moment, because I forgot to write that down, Wes Abbott, with yet another gorgeous cover from Bruno Redondo. This one features, as teased in the last issue, the rise of Superwing, as Dick Grayson now granted the powers of, I mean, it doesn't really specify, but he pretty much has all the powers, now makes his way across the world to help his friends and to help the world in a larger way. I mean, it kind of reminded me of the All-Star Superman issue where Lois gets Superman's powers for a day, and it's like, I can see and feel, you know, everything that you feel, and it's kind of amazing, but also terrifying in a way, where you have all this power, and you're kind of expected to be responsible about it. Wink, Spider-Man. But yes, no, Nightwing, Superwing, makes his way around the world, helping out where he can, has a little meeting with Superman to kind of ground himself in the perspective that, of course, Superman has had for decades at this point, having been born with the powers and having become accustomed to it. Nightwing, before he's able to take down Neron and the rest of his horde who have been sent to Earth to kidnap Olivia, is stripped of his powers by Neron. And Neron, of course, being the demon that he is still trying to bargain with Nightwing, but of course, he's not having it. And has one final trick up his sleeve. Yes, of course, you had to see it coming. It is his fifth dimensional enchanted Escrima sticks, which were a gift by his old friend, Nightbite. It was Nightbite, right? Mm-hmm. Getting that? Right. I forget Night. The other name that he gave for himself. Nightbright, Nightlight. You get it. Anyway, Nightbite. Uses his enchanted Escrima sticks to turn Neron into a horrible, I don't even know, Lovecraftian demon, yeah. And then sends his ass back to hell. Meanwhile, Olivia is sent to live with the Amazons on Themyscira and is also made an honorary Titan, which I thought was very sweet, and I'm sure mm-hmm. she will be making her return later in the series when she's had a bit more training. Neron, still recovering from everything that happened, gets a little visit from Raven, who promptly decimates him, basically, and installs Blaze as the new queen of the underworld, but not before she informs him of a little secret that's going to factor in to Titans number one on sale now, even though it doesn't make any mention of this. But I assume it'll be coming down later in the series. Yeah. The backup, written by C.S. Puckett, I hope I pronounced that right, with pencils from Daniel HDR, inks from Jonas Trinidad, and colors from Adriana Lucas, with letters also from Wes Abbott, concludes our little Night at the Circus story, as we now reveal the identity of the person who had tried to sabotage the Trapeze Act. It was a disgruntled ex-employee who was brought to justice, and sort of wraps this little training session slash offshoot mission between Dick and John in a, I think, fairly nice way. So, main story, I actually enjoyed this issue the most. This arc's been a little hit or miss for me. Just the whole concept of the Hell Heist was kind of lost on me. And also, as much as I enjoyed the Titans, I think Rob had said this initially, but it was starting to kind of feel like this was the Titans' second book and not a Nightwing solo book, which is a little bit of a problem when you're reading a book called Nightwing. But yeah, I think this kind of put a nice wrap on everything, and hopefully we're getting back to the solo stuff in Bloodhaven, and we can just leave all the Titans stuff to the Titans series. Solid conclusion. Nice seeing Nightwing with powers for a little bit, and of course he would be the super responsible and caring person that he would be. So a fun concept for the little bit that it lasted. And then nice to kind of see the Olivia stuff wrapped for now. I wonder how that will play out in the future. Like I said, I imagine she'll be somewhat of a recurring character later on down the line, but at least she's kind of given a little bit of a happy ending again at the conclusion of this arc. Solid issue. Can't really complain, but I'm definitely eager to get back to some solo Nightwing stuff. And the backup, just a solid conclusion. Nothing too special there. So I gave this one an 8.25 out of 10.
Right on. It says this takes place before Revenge of the Gods, and I'm thinking that that timeline does make sense. I thought it was kind of cool that we got to see Nightwing say Nightwing is awesome one more time. I like how Olivia picked out her superhero code name. She combined Nightwing and Blockbuster for Nightbuster, and she said she did it just to annoy her dad. I thought that was pretty cool. So my question, I got a question, and Brandon's probably the one to answer this, but this goes to you too, Rob. Did Raven just have the power to kick Neron's ass that hard? Or does she have some sort of power to take the reign of hell away from him?
I mean, that might be what's explored in Titans, because there's something going on with Raven. And I think they had this kind of storyline in the... what the hell was it called? The thing with Infinite Frontier, where they did Looks into the Future. Oh my god.
Oh.
A two-month initiative.
Who cares?
Yeah, it's but that little story, I'm pretty sure it was in that where they talked about Raven being split into two, and then I just remember there was something about that recently, that her good side and her bad side were separated and one was in hell or something like that.
Were you watching the Titans show this year?
No, but
I was gonna say
I know what you're talking about, because I remember reading it. I'm thinking, oh, this is just like what happened in the cartoon. You're talking about the live action Titans show.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I haven't watched it since season three. But it also happened in the animated series. So I guess it happens a lot. It definitely seems like that. And if it is, I wish I could remember the story that happened, and I'm pretty sure it was in that thing with Infinite Frontier. What the hell was it? Future State. Oh my god. I'm pretty sure it was in Future State Titans. Or Teen Titans.
That's a hell of a way back, man. There ain't no way I'd be able to remember that. No way at all.
But if it is, like, that could be the hint as to just what could be going on with Raven. Wait, was it that? Or was it Titans pre-Infinite Frontier? Oh my god. Maybe it's that Titans series that ended when Kyle actually joined the team, Kyle Rayner. Maybe it was that. Maybe. I gotta see if I can find it. But the point is, might be a callback to that. And if that is anything to be looks at, that version of Raven was very powerful and very just non-caring. And maybe when she's got the good side of her in her, that she's a little more reserved in unleashing the power, right? And just more conscious of how much power she unleashes. So when she doesn't have that conscience within her, she can unleash full power. Realistically, I think with the power of being the daughter of Trigon, she could just one-shot the entire DC universe if she wanted to.
Yeah, I think you might be right. It's kind of coming back to me. I think in the Future State,
right, Black Adam
mini event, we saw Raven with four eyes.
Yeah, she was even like the thing that was destroying the world, the universe in Future State Black Adam.
That's not okay.
The year 1 million. Yeah.
She needs to knock that shit off. That's a long way. They got plenty of time to stop that. Yeah. As far as this book goes, though, Travis Moore, not my favorite artist, but he is far from my least favorite, and he does a really good job here. Lucas makes that gold in Superwings costume. God, I hate that name. But he makes that gold in the costume almost look like it's glowing.
Yeah.
And Taylor put a great ending on Olivia's story. I love that first part graded separately. That would have gotten a 9.25. The backup I thought was a good ending, a really soft one, but basically just a feel-good story. It was, the art was pretty average, really. The colors were great. And John, at the end, seemed a little too young Clark Kent naive in his dialogue. But all in all, it really was just a little feel-good mystery story with the Super Sons 2.0. That would have gotten it an 8 out of 10. It's a very solid book all the way around. And because of that, the score gets a little bit more than rounded up. Ovaled up, maybe? I'm not sure. Anyway, Nightwing as a whole gets 9 out of 10.
Damn, right on. Superwing is awesome. And unfortunately, this may be the last time we ever see it. And I'm kind of disappointed about that. I really think it's cool. But it's understandable why Nightwing needs to be just regular human, not metahuman or superpowered or anything. It means more.
He'd make the super fam look like shit.
Exactly.
And you know this.
I gotta say, I love the dynamic with Dick and Clark. And not just because of the Rock and New Year's Eve, but also they just have such a great relationship. But that, did that just age me, Josh?
Uh-huh. Okay. A little bit.
Okay. That went over some people's heads.
That's okay.
I imagine, Brandon, at least you know that reference, right?
Was that?
I'm going to take that as a no.
I said the thing with one of my, like, what I love about Dick and Clark, besides just the Rock and New Year's Eve.
Oh, God. Nice.
Okay, so you do, yes, get it. Okay. I don't feel that old. I don't feel that old.
Rock and New Year's Eve. Yeah, no, right. I don't think that's that. Well, yeah. I don't think that makes you that ancient. Yeah. They still do that? I have no idea.
I think they still do the Rock and New Year's Eve.
New Year's Eve, yeah.
I don't know if they put his name on it still as like an honorary thing, or if they just call it Rock and New Year's Eve.
I don't think so. It's Andy Cohen and Anderson Cooper, if I'm not mistaken.
I think they call it, yeah. Like, it still has that name, but it's hosted by someone else.
I thought it was
else.
Ryan Seacrest.
Yeah, I think it's Ryan Seacrest.
Oh, well, then that's not the good one. The good one to watch is Anderson Cooper and Andy Cohen, because they get shit-faced and they say things that are on their mind. It's great.
Oh, okay. I would love to watch Anderson Cooper shit-faced. That sounds like a dream.
Yep. It only happens when he's with Andy Cohen, so.
Fair enough. Where was I? Right. The relationship
in Ontario
with Nightwing and Superman. I love their relationship. I love seeing them together way better than in Nightwing and Batman ever will be. Superman being that uncle mentor to Dick Grayson in a way. And then in turn doing the same thing for John. Dick doing what Clark did for him, but now doing it for John. As we've seen in the backups, I think it's such a great, great turnaround and fits so well. The Superwing costume, though, I got to say, it definitely feels like it takes a lot of notes from the Krypton version of Nightwing, which I think is also very fitting, considering, as I mentioned, the relationship he's had with Superman, as we all know. Just that blue and gold and the way it's placed. I took a look at some of the old Nightwing costumes, like the Kryptonian Nightwing, and it's striking how close it is, right?
I got some news after you get done.
All right. art's fantastic. I agree. A very nice ending to the Olivia storyline. I look forward to seeing her show up again as Nightbuster. There's a lot of young heroes popping up all over the place. I think it's time for another Teen Titans or a young Justice 3.0, if you will. I'm all for whatever they do next. 8.75 out of 10 for this one, though. It's a solid issue. Neron's a bastard, but he's potentially dead now. Raven's just OP. I'm curious what's going on there.
Me too.
Me too.
I also love that kind of unhealthy camaraderie between kings of hell, Neron and Trigon, just talking, shooting the shit, and like, yeah, you're a bitch. You suck too. Yeah, this is my port of hell. Get out of my port. Like, just I could read
well,
that.
Well, now it's Blazes, so they've got to watch their P's and Q's, because if I remember correctly, Blaze is not a patient person.
Yeah, I could believe that.
But guys, I just got a text message from my biological father. Oh. And he just went to Walmart, and he was over in the toy section. Oh. And they were stocking the shelves with the Titans Build-A-Figures.
Oh, damn.
This is in Missouri, and it's going to be too late for anybody to do anything about it. So, but in any case, he was staring at them as they were putting them up on the shelf, and he waited till they were all stocked up and everything. And he's like, he was trying to figure out which one he was going to get. So he grabbed up all four of them, and he took them over to the price scanner. And they were incorrectly barcoded for $5 a piece.
Ooh. I've heard stories of that. It doesn't happen up here.
Yeah. So he just got the entire Build-A-Figure wave that's going for about $125, $150 collected for $20.
Damn.
I know, right?
Did he get you a set too?
No. And I kind of pissed off, but I wasn't going to say that.
Should ask
give
him.
Give me a set, damn it.
I'll send you $20. Get me four.
I'm going to text him right now.
Yeah. I can feel Brandon's jealousy through the silence. Wait, are you there, Brandon?
Well, I mean, he's still connected, so he's probably talking.
Wait, sorry. I was playing piano. I wasn't paying attention.
I heard Josh's
figures, and then like I kind of zonked out, and then I wasn't paying attention.
Josh's dad got all four Titans Build-A-Figures from McFarlane for $20.
Oh, jeez. That is a...
He went to Walmart.
Correct pricing.
Damn.
Yep. They scanned wrong. $5 a piece. Man, that's a hell of a coupon, man.
Yeah, I'll say. I think I paid $20 for just Roy.
Yeah.
Yep.
God damn. That's a hell of a steal.
I just told them, I said, hey, if you go back there and there's still $5, pick me up three sets and I'll pay you for them.
That's insane.
It is insane. God, hell of a lucky thing, though, man. That shit never happens to me. Other than I found that Batman statue from McFarlane, the year two one with his cape long drawn, you know, he's standing next to the tombstone and all that. I found that for $75 and I was looking online and that's usually like $90 to $120. But those are the deals that I find. $15 off $100. You know?
Yeah.
$20 off of $25, yeah, that only happens to other people.
Yeah.
I don't get that kind of action.
Go figure.
Yes.
Oh, man. All right. We are moving on to our last book of the week. What's that last book? That's right. I said last book of the week.
Why is this our last book of the week, Rob?
I bet you're wondering, why only four books? Well, last week, if you were listening, you heard that we started up our paid review episodes as well, our subscription-only reviews, which will feature, on average, we'll say three books per week. usually what would essentially be
our spotlight issues.
Spotlight issues. Sorry, what's not a word? You very confused me.
KK. KK is not a word.
Oh. Okay.
All right, sure. That's KK. Acceptable. But there's KK. There's no reasons for 2Ks. There never has been, people. There never has been.
There is definitely a reason for 2Ks. No, and that not. Is there's all those sports games, Borderlands. Like, 2K Studios has done so much.
Nonsense. GG? Sure. AK? Nonsense. It's the exact same amount of letters as OK.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
But instead of hitting O and then K, I just double tap the K. I don't have to move my finger to the upright.
Total laziness.
It is.
You just swipe it now. I mean,
for I don't even have to do it. I just tap tap. That's it. Tap tap enter. Done.
Sad.
It's been going for like 15 years. People have been doing this.
I know. Maybe and longer. It breaks my little grammatical heart.
Anyway, yes.
I just looked up and Mambat was trying to eat me.
our paid review episodes are essentially what our spotlight sections were. New number ones, big issues, and if there's very few of those, we're still trying to keep it to 3 books an episode minimum, so you might just see the occasional very interesting issue just pop up there. And if you want to see
like what books we are put in the Green Arrows.
Exactly. If you want to see what books we are reviewing later on today, I was going to say later on today for us, but in another episode altogether for you, be sure to check it out. All you got to do is subscribe to our Discord for $2.99 a month, and you get access to that, plus so much more. It's really worth it. Definitely check it out. And I've also realized that we skipped
over... You pay more for a cup of coffee.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, depends where you go. Up here, it's like $2 for a large at Timmy's. But if you go to Starbucks, oh, wow. Yeah, you're paying like insane. Yeah, but the coffee sucks. So
coffee does suck at Starbucks. It's burnt and it's burnt on purpose, people. All right.
I agree. That's why I go to Second Cup. Really, lawnmower guy? You have to do this now? I hope that's not being picked up on the mic.
Oh, I can hear it loud and clear, but we'll get that in post.
Jimmy, all right. I need lawnmower in post. All
right. Jeez, what the hell? It sounds like a freaking chainsaw. Is this even a lawnmower?
That sounds like a leaf blower. Sounds like a leaf blower to me. Or a lawnmower.
Oh my actually, God, it is like a lawnmower. It's an industrial-sized lawnmower. It's one of the giant freaking ride-ons. Holy crap, that thing's loud. I felt my chair vibrate. I'm on the second floor.
Holy cow.
Yeah, all right. That's a heck of a lawnmower. Before we continue, though, I realized we forgot to do the honorable mentions.
Oh.
Yeah, well, I jumped right into Harley Quinn, and I was like, there's something missing here, but I'm going to just go with it.
Well, I can wrap it up real quick. DC Ruby number 4, The Sandman Universe, The Dead Boy Detectives number 6, and Static Shadows of Dakota number 4 are all awesome. Tim Drake, and Robin number 9 is not.
I will admit, though, like this current story arc with Batwoman, I don't hate it. I still question the boat. Oh, the boat is still so stupid, but the actual story isn't bad.
It's better. It's still bad.
I mean, it's definitely better. I wouldn't call it as definitely not as bad as it was. But like, if this were the opening story arc, I would have given this book a better chance. I still question the choices about the boat, though. The whole living on a marina thing, I don't know. I don't care how it can be explained. It makes no sense.
It's really dumb, like a lot of other choices.
Yeah.
But that Megan Fitzmartin deserves no more breath from me.
Right. instead, we will give breath to Action Comics number 1055.
Hey, seeing how this is such a big one, do we want to talk about this one in parts?
Yeah, we could do that.
Be a little bit easier that way.
Sure thing. We can do just that. I mean, yeah, we could do that. Like the backups are very, very small, but we could still do that. Okay, so the main story, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson with art from Rafa Sandoval, colors from Matt Herms, and letters from Dave Sharp, with an amazing-looking cover featuring the one and only Hank Henshaw, the cyborg Superman, by Sebastian Fiumara. So Superman and Fam, the Super Fam, continue to help John Corbin find his sister Tracy Corbin by hunting down the cyborg Superman, Hank Henshaw. And in order to find Henshaw, Superman, joined by Connor, Steel, and Supergirl, completing the Rise of the Superman collection, activates a basic version of the Eradicator. An Eradicator does locate Henshaw using his ability to find... to find discrepancies in Kryptonian DNA, such as Connor and John. And locate them down and eradicate them. Yeah, Kryptonian mudbloods, if you will, yeah. So Eradicator does locate Henshaw and takes the group to his lair, quote in quotations, where they discover Henshaw with an upgraded body, realistically just a shiny new arm, and Tracy, now a Metallo herself. Because, you know, Henshaw's been up to some shit, as he does. During the run through the, or I guess walk through the dark, long hallway towards the main base, the main room where Henshaw is located, Osol and Otho are both with the Super Fam as well, and are talking with Henshaw, with Corbin, as they find him very creepy, and he gives them a brief rundown of his own childhood and his history and why he is the way he is, and then they start to feel a bit of remorse towards it. And, you know, so did I. Maybe Metallo's not so bad, as he really does want to turn himself around now. Could be very interesting, I think, if Metallo becomes a proper good guy, but something tells me that's not going to happen. He might be too far gone as a machine. What do you guys think about that? You're muted, bud.
Why am I not surprised? Superman calling for the Eradicator is fucking mind-blowing. Them bringing up Helgramite, Neil Adams baddie, yuck. He really is gross.
Yeah.
Yuck. I know way too much about real Helgramites because Holly is a nature nerd, so...
Oh, yeah.
and, like you, I'm assuming Tracy is now the new Metallo. It wasn't exactly clear, but sure as hell did look like it. This part, man, it's such a great story. I truly do look forward to reading this every month. Nothing to do with being a huge Superman fan. I haven't been in a long time, but PKJ fixed that. The story, it's the story that keeps pulling me back. Nothing else. I mean, the rest is amazing as well, but it's the actual story. It's just that good. And the art is nearly perfect. If this part was the whole issue, it would have a 9.75 out of 10. Easy, yeah. All day long.
Yeah.
What do you think, Big BC?
I'm right there with you. I mean, I've been singing the praises of this book for so long. It just feels kind of repetitive, but it just kind of continues to impress. And it's like, there are like little things in the book that I'll pick up on, and it'll spark an idea that I know Johnson will eventually explore, but it just kind of gets me more and more excited. Like they've frequently been talking about like the Blue Earth movement. We haven't really gotten a lot of context for that, but you know, it's this active presence in Metropolis. But there's also this, it's like one line where they talk about the War World refugee camps, or it's like a neighborhood or something. And like, we know that's a part of Metropolis, but still an area that's totally unexplored. And I was just like, there's so much potential there. And I could totally see him fleshing that out. Like, how do these War Worldians fit into Metropolis and everything? But I mean, you know, aside from like the smaller points, the main story is also really great too. And kind of seeing how he's been able to, I think, flesh out Metallo more than, I mean, any other writer I can think of. Because I feel like Metallo is usually kind of like, he's like a Superman villain you throw in when you just need a Superman villain for him to fight. He never really had that level of depth to him, with the exception of a couple of places. So I feel like this is kind of really, you know, giving him that extra added level of sympathy, despite the horrible things that he's done, and also a possible path of redemption for Corbin, which I think could be an interesting angle to explore. I can't imagine he's going to be absolved of everything, but you know, it's at least someone's like trying to kind of build a larger story. So I appreciate that. So, like you said, definitely a book I continually look forward to, and just can't wait for the next one. And I am so in love with the fact that this story, which is great, is being put on pause for a fucking Night Terrors tie-in for the next 2 months after June. So
I
can't wait. It's going to be so great. But yeah, no, this one gets, at least the main story gets a 9 out of 10 for me.
Right on.
Sarcasm is strong in this one.
Is there something I've realized? And well, before I get into that, I just want to shout out that the whole Death of Superman throwbacks here, and just having all four Superman replacements show up in the same freaking panel, I thought was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Both from the original story as a throwback, and also like in today, it was really cool to see. But also, I think I've realized Superman's greatest enemy, and it's kind of a finicky one for him, and it's technology. It's not Lex Luthor, it's not Brainiac, it's not Cyborg Superman, it's technology itself. And there's one thing I've noticed, that all of his greatest enemies, and three of which I just named, because if you ask somebody who Superman's biggest nemesis is, those three will get brought up more often. And all three heavily have to do with technology, and they tend to always be a thorn in his side.
Technology and magic.
Like magic's up there, but I think magic is considered more of the weakness, instead of, but with enemy, like, it's kind of interesting because Superman is kind of a scientific genius in the same right, and is no stranger to technology, but the technology his home planet used, very different from the technology he goes up against. And he's almost like, wow, I'm getting a little deep with it now, almost like his enemy is time. He's a man of the future stuck living as a person from the past, but also fighting present future. Oh god, what is wrong with you? What the I hurt my brain.
Everybody likes layers.
I hate talking about time. I got to figure out that thought, write it down, and see where I was going with that. Oh, it's a parfait. Yeah. All right. Now moving on to the first backup, Clark and Lois 2, Electric Boogaloo. Clark and Lois are taking the fight to Doombreaker directly, and with Lois finding a stun gun of sorts, I leave him in a stasis. of sorts, as they then discover the ship that John found. Realizing he may still be in great danger as they discover the princess that took him lied about needing to stop a violent uprising against her, as the uprising is instead to stop her being a violent dictator of a ruler that may have actually killed her parents to get there, and she's taken John straight to that home planet she is from, where all the people are currently rioting to get into the palace and basically kill her. But then she kills them first using giant robots. What a jerk. Seriously, what a big jerk.
Killamax.
Killamax, that's, yeah.
Killamax.
Bit of a small chapter, this one, compared to the previous stories we've had in this story. Really just catching up to plot, I think, is what this one felt like, which I'm not against, but just didn't feel like much happened in comparison. They finished off with Doombreaker temporarily, and now they just got to get back to John. We'll see where this goes. But I trust in Dan Jurgens. So. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know what? Definitely. I didn't say the credits. I wrote them down separately. Yeah, this is written by Dan Jurgens with art from Lee Weeks, colors from Elizabeth Breitweiser, and letters from Rob Lee.
There you go.
Yeah.
I can tell you I was not supposed to like this story that much. I warned against it, actively spoke out. I was wrong. While the art was good, it's not my favorite. But this is another one of those that just keeps me coming back. You know how with digital issues, hell, even sometimes even with physical ones, you forget about the backup? Nope. Not here. If this was an individual story, this would be 8.75 out of 10 for sure. Nice.
Yeah. You there?
Oh, I might have been muted. Sorry. I think I muted myself. No, I said, you know, some might say that the flashbacks to the Kid John days are unnecessary. I don't know. I'm with you, Josh. Every month I keep coming back, have a great time. It's just fun and innocent, and the art is great. So I don't know. I can't imagine why anyone would complain, but I'm sure they can find a reason. So this one got an 8.5 out of 10 for me.
I was one of those people. I said, let's leave young John back in the past. But God damn it, I was wrong. This story is great.
It's the distant and, past. I'm glad that it happened. 2019. Or I guess
2019. Right.
Distant past.
Just over a third of a decade.
God damn it.
Right.
Yeah. All right. And our last backup, because Action Comics is special. They get two. Is about Steel. Written by
this Dorado. Is where Rob gets to say I told you so.
Oh, as I read it I was thinking I can't wait to tell Josh I told you so. Yeah. Alright, so this is written by Dorado Quick with art from Yasmin I thought it was Yasmin, but then I wrote it down as Yasim. Maybe that's autocorrect, because I could have sworn it was Yasmin Flores Montanez, with colors from Brad Anderson and letters from Dave Sharp. John Henry is giving a presentation to a board. We're not sure what the board is. Not a wooden board, a board of people. We're not sure where this board is or who the board is or what the board is, but it's a board of people to prove the metal of his steelworks.
It's the board of directors over the incorporation of Metropolis, basically the Chamber of Commerce.
Oh, okay. All right. I wasn't sure about that. Cause I thought I wasn't sure if it was another company or if it was Steelworks board of directors or a city board of directors. It was very, kind of on the fence about that one. Okay. But that makes sense. But yeah, he's giving this presentation to a board of directors to prove the metal, if you will, of his Steelworks technology. Mm-hmm. Providing sustainable shields for each building in Metropolis for a lesser cost than other companies, and providing nothing but protection for the people of Metropolis, for the people by the people, which has been said many times, but this is quite honestly more on the nose than it's ever been meant to before. Steelworks drones will be on the street during various crises to assist the population, and it has safe walls in place controlled by the people of Metropolis with their smartphones to protect against hacks and controlling issues and any danger that may happen against the populace. All of this seemed to go very well until Mr. Terrific shows up, told you so, Josh, to tell John Henry that he's made a mistake. Yeah. I get where you were coming from last issue, Josh, with you weren't sure if it was Mr. Terrific because it was so shadowy, it didn't make sense. I was on the fence by that too, but I could not draw away from the fact that those are clearly T-spheres. You can see the T, but those are T-spheres. It had to be. Yeah. There was no other way. Yeah.
Just didn't make much sense to me.
I had a feeling it was going to be more of like a friendly see you soon, John, instead of a dastardly see you soon, nefarious see you soon, John.
There you go.
Because Terrific does come up and say you've made a grave mistake, but we think it's just like, you, by the way, I hacked your system. Like you fucked up. I found a flaw.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. Either way, I'm super stoked for Steelworks, and I hope that while it is a different creative team than we're getting in this story, I do hope the level of fun and interest that I have kind of translates well into the ongoing series, which I think is supposed to come out this month, if not next month. I'm all for it, though.
That'd be great. I'm looking forward to it, too. Yeah, for sure.
For the whole issue, though, loved it. All three stories were really interesting. Cyborg Superman, one of my favorite villains of all time. Steel was great to see. I love Young John era of Superman stories. 9.25 out of 10 for this issue. Screw it. 9.5. It's a good day.
Dude, I mean, what can you even say anymore? I mean, for one, I mean, it should be getting passed around in DC. Should we just call this Philip Kennedy Johnson's Action Comics? and, I mean, we could honestly just move Action to Quick Bites permanently. It could be summed up like, yeah, it was awesome. Again.
Yeah.
It's another Swamp Thing situation where it's just every issue is top of its game and you don't feel like you're getting slighted or the story is suffering or stuttering at all. And it's just so solid, man. And with books like Swamp Thing, Detective Comics, Poison Ivy, this one, where the stories are just phenomenal, man. I really, really, truly hope that that is going to be a trend that keeps going in DC. Even if it means that all we get is just minis. Which I don't want, by the way.
No. But it is, honestly, it's a way to gauge interest in a book, unfortunately. It is the way right now. It seems to be working.
Let's see what happens, as long as it's not every book goes to minis. All right. That's everything for Action Comics, man. It's awesome.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong with it.
Exactly. Brandon, what do you think of Steelworks?
Well, I love the rest of this issue, and I kind of like the story for this backup. The dialogue is so bad. I couldn't believe it. it was trying like real, and I don't know how old this writer is, so I can't gauge it. It was so bad. Like it was trying so hard to be like hip, and I understand at a certain point that like you're gonna have stuff like that, but like it feels so awkward seeing that stuff trying to translate in the comic. And I think that was the biggest detractor for me, was the dialogue. The art was okay. Michael Holt
saying, you know, you done messed up, right?
Yeah. Well, also just like, oh my God, what did, what did Nat say? What did Natasha say? She just like said like it's mid, and I was like, oh god, peel my skin off.
The entire conversation between her and Connor was like, bad, man.
Her and Connor was like painful. So like I like the story. Like I like the focus on Steelworks, and I'm with you. I'm excited to see Michael Dorn and Sami Basri, and all the previews and stuff look really great. But God, I hope the dialogue is not like this, or I will not be long on that book. The issue in particular, I'm going to give it a 9 because everything else is great, but the backup is like, I don't even want to score it because I'm really conflicted because the story is somewhat interesting, just the focus on Steel, but God, the dialogue is so fucking bad. It was almost hard to get past.
I did find the dialogue cringy at times, but I just chalked it up to
being 20-something. No offense, Brandon.
I can use it in my day-to-day life because I'm a real person, and you know that makes sense. But just I don't know, seeing it spoken in a comic book by characters that are, in some cases, older than my grandparents, or at the very, I mean, not like Natasha and Connor, but like. It feels so awkward and like just a weird attempt to try and make it more modern or relatable. And I don't know. I've never been fond of that when writers try really hard to make it sound like what the kids are saying now. And I say that as a kid myself.
Yeah. Don't do that because it really dates the comic. And in 20 years, no one's going to be able to go back and read No Cap Fam and even know what the fuck that's supposed to mean.
I don't even know what the fuck it's supposed to mean now.
It means no lie.
My point exactly.
It means I'm not lying, but I mean, anyway.
No Cap Fam?
No Cap Fam. Let's keep it normal and maybe not super duper cringy. Although I will say that we'll call it teenage speak. This teenage speak is way better than Brian Michael Bendis's teenage speak. I'll read that shit over the last series of Naomi any day.
That's
this teenage speak. Yes, this teenage speak. The teenage speak he wrote. Yes, that teenage speak that he wrote. The teenage speak that Bendis wrote. Yeah, the teenage speak that Bendis wrote.
It's not even teenage speak. It's more just repetitive. Like it's deliberately trying to be repetitive because he's a huge David Mamet fan. But like. I don't know. I'm conflicted because, like, I read that stuff and I wince. And I feel like they're kind of on that same level of obnoxious, but that's just me.
Being repetitive? Yes, being repetitive. Bendis being repetitive. Bendis totally being repetitive. Bendis. Brian Michael Bendis? Brian Michael Bendis, BMB, being
you
repetitive.
Got it.
It's all I can think about whenever I hear his name is just the constant word bubbles of the same shit over and over again in a single panel.
I don't know if you guys are old enough to remember it or not, but when I see Brian Michael Bendis's ladder dialogue, that's what I call it. It reminds me of The Labyrinth, the first scene where David Bowie steals the baby. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, just look up that clip. You don't have to sit through all of Labyrinth. So saith the Brandon, but the boy with the babe. Yeah, that's what it reminds me of, and it's not a good thing. No one can pull that off except for
Brandon. You ain't muted, bud. Man loves his piano. He's got a. Have what the hell's what? He's scoring the podcast.
Yeah, look, it's
give
piano
us an ominous
for
tone.
Me,
I love it.
Piano for me is much like your figures. Like if it's in front of me, I'm gonna play on it. Like
that's
I'll play with it. I can't resist. You expect no less.
I get it. Just give us like a deep score, like a deep sound, like
you got
like something ominous is about to come at least soon. because we're getting into our top three books of the week and our favorite moment if we had one.
I got you.
Yeah.
Hang on.
Oh. Chills. I like it. Oh, man. All right. Let me start us off here because it's going to sound confusing, but I couldn't help it. I just, if we're doing this, we're doing it like this. My top three books of the week are number three, Justice Society of America. Hint, hint. Number two, hint. Green Arrow, question mark. And number one, Action Comics, because hell yeah. And if you're confused by that top three, well, that's just more meaning to check out our subscription review show, and you'll see why two of those books made my top three. JSA and GA are in my top three. You got to check that out, because goddamn, I like them. I had a favorite moment if I had one. Well, I did have two, actually. Eradicator showing up was a bit of a thrill, but I got to give it to Captain Carrot and the Zoo Crew writing again one more time. Hopefully not the last time.
Hopefully. Well, my top three are actually kind of similar to yours, just a little bit shifted in order. At number three, I had JSA, which I'm sure we'll get to in the bonus episode. At number two, I had Action Comics, but at number one, had to give it to Green Arrow, which was easily the issue that put the biggest smile on my face. But my favorite moment, at least from the books that we've covered this week, probably would have to go to, I don't know, honestly, just the moments between the Super Family and Action were pretty great, and them kind of going back and forth on creepiest villain and also taking out parts of the Necro Hive. Like, just seeing them work together, it was great.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, sticking with the general consensus here, my top three is going to make you want to bump on over to that bonus show as well. Number three, against all expectations, is City Boy. Number two is Nightwing. Oh, and number one is Action Comics. And because it rang back so true to my childhood, my favorite moment out of the regular show is going to be in Harley Quinn when she's walking up and she goes, "Oh man, the Gravitron. I used to love these things. I'd have the gnarliest pukes after them. I can so relate, Harley. It was my favorite ride. I had to make sure I didn't eat at least 3 hours prior to getting on it, but it was so fun." Love the Gravitron. Yeah. Favorite moment.
Right on. All right. Well, that was our favorite moment. And now it's time for your favorite moment. It is
Is it?
Oh, that's nasty.
I was going to say Brandon plays in.
Gotcha.
There you
Perfect.
Go.
I love it. All right. Yeah, fuck it. I didn't have one this week. I'm going to be honest with you. I took some Pepto. I honestly didn't even hate Tim Drake this week. I'm not going to say I loved it. I tolerated it to a point that I didn't hate it.
No.
I was trying to think, like, I genuinely don't think I had, and I know, I think the last week I didn't have one either, so I feel bad kind of like weaseling out of it again, but the lowest score I think I gave was for Harley, which is an 8 out of 10, and that's pretty good, so I think I also took some Pepto this week, maybe a couple Tums.
I mean, the lowest score I gave was 8.75.
So
the lowest score,
it was pretty high this week.
Yeah.
The lowest score I gave this week was 7.75, and that went to Unstoppable Doom Patrol, a book that I had a lot of fun with. But I think that it is of no surprise that if I'm going to mention a biggest stinker,
I want to flush it again.
Goodbye, Tim Drake. You're going down the bubble.
And you're coming out in the marina. Because that's where Gotham sewage goes. You're living in a toilet.
Back door.
Ugh.
None of this makes any sense.
That just brought us right back to backside, and I need to stop. All right.
Penty line equation.
God damn it. That joke just raises more freaking questions than answers, and I don't want to ask them. I just don't. All right, well, that's our show. If you feel like supporting us, be sure to check out our Discord server for only $2.99 a month. Visit our website, notarobotpodcast.com, for links to Twitter, Instagram, Discord, our various shows, and more. And subscribe to our Substack for bonus reviews and articles. And as always, there's only one way we say goodbye around here. Until next time.
Be good to each other.
And don't play the piano. No, I'm just kidding. And don't be a robot. Don't ever stop playing the piano. Just have a